Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for listening and tuning in this morning. If you'd like to tune in and ask our questions, a guest, it's one of those mornings already. If you have a question or comment for our guest, the number to call is 541-472-1270. And we ask that you do hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news in about 25 minutes. So bear that in mind. It is the first Tuesday of the month. That means City Council is in studio today. And we're welcoming Councilor DJ Fraser and Joel King into the studios. And gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the microphones of KJO. Glad to have you with us on this gorgeous summer day here in Southern Oregon.
As always, Chuck, thank you for having us.
Yeah, and Mr. King.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for serving your community.
Oh,
our
well.
Community.
That's my job. I get paid for it, unlike you gentlemen. We appreciate your volunteerism. No. First question out of the box today, we heard from the Supreme Court. And I'd just like to get your reaction on the decision. Mr. Fraser.
Well, I, for one, and I believe we as a city, were confident that the decision would be made in favor of Grants Pass because that's why we appealed to the highest court of the land. I'm not surprised by their decision, and I'm pleased in their decision and looking forward to moving forward.
All right. Mr. King.
Well, I would echo DJ's feelings. As we look at the Supreme Court, it doesn't solve the issue. All it does is tell us what is legal and what is an improper punishment or a proper punishment in terms of what is constitutional and not constitutional. The state of Oregon has like the third highest rate of homelessness in the United States. It has increased by, where is it here? I got it in front of me. Within this last year, it's increased significantly by 8.5%. And there's no county that has more shelter beds than unsheltered homeless. In fact, the largest counties that have the most shelter beds have the most unsheltered homeless, both in absolute numbers and on a per capita basis. So as we move forward, we need to think about what we're doing and where we're going in the future. There's a lot of emotion out there. There's a lot of anger from people that haven't been able to use their parks in the last year. There's a lot of anger from people who made the parks their home the last 2 years, and now that it looks like that opportunity will be more limited by what the court said was cruel and unusual punishment. So we'll see. And we have yet to chart our course, but we will.
All right. We have yet to chart our course. If we were anticipating this verdict, this rendering by the Supreme Court, that what the Ninth Circuit Court ruled was unconstitutional, why do we not have a contingency plan in place? Why have we not planned for this? Why have we not planned for either contingency here? I did not expect a wave of blue uniformed policemen wading through the park and cleaning it out on the first day. Did not expect that. But I know there are people out there saying, now the Supreme Court's out of your way, you can no longer rely on that restraining order that the Ninth Circuit issued. What is our plan from here? And from what I understand, we don't even have a meeting scheduled until July 20th for the council.
So it was fair for you to not expect a sea of blue uniforms clearing out the parks because that is not the plan.
Yeah.
So the plan moving forward, as I understand it, is since the Supreme Court remanded the Eighth Amendment argument, we still need to go back to the lower courts and iron out what we're calling a constellation of other issues that were supported by that backbone argument.
Okay.
So the plan moving forward is in the state of Oregon, municipalities have to comply with House Bill 3115, which establishes standards for involuntary homelessness, sleeping on public lands, and the municipalities are allowed to enact objectively reasonable standards for allowing this. And that is really the core of the plan at this point. We do have plans and ideas ahead of us, but it was very important, and it still is, to be patient so that our legal counsel can really iron out most of the details moving forward from here. We did have an executive session yesterday, and we got an update from our legal counsel that enlightened counsel on the options. And what the basic takeaway of that is compliance with House Bill 3115, as every other community in Oregon needs to do, and no longer operating under the federal injunction that we have been for 5 years now.
All right, Joel, do you want to weigh in?
Well, the Supreme Court remands it back to the Ninth Circuit, and then the Ninth Circuit goes through their rigmarole, and then they issue direction from there. In step with what the Supreme Court said. We have a meeting scheduled July 10th, special meeting at 6 o'clock to look at time, place, and manner regulations to see what is...
On July 10th? I didn't find that on your station, on the city's website.
Yeah, it's right here.
Okay, well, I believe you.
Yeah, it's right here. So, anyway, we scheduled it as soon as possible, and we're going to have that tentative plan in place before the Ninth Circuit comes out with theirs, and we may have to adjust it after the Ninth Circuit responds back to the Supreme Court and to us with lifting the injunction.
Now, this meeting on the 10th, what kind of meeting? Is it going to be an executive session? Is it going to be an open meeting? Is it going to be like a business session? Will public comment be accepted?
It's going to be an open meeting. Obviously, there'll be some type of public involvement. The details have yet to be firmed up. Because we're responding to the lawyer's direction and where we need to go. So, but yes, it will be open to the public.
Oh, all right. Well, certainly that's good news, and certainly quicker action than I had surmised. Let's look ahead. Well, actually, we can look back because we know what we need to do, don't we? Is it finding a place to put them?
So, as far as not having to really focus on the federal injunction part of this whole issue. If I understand it right, there is no longer the issue of involuntary homelessness tied to the available shelters in the community, because it doesn't mention that in House Bill 3115, which is where our compliance is going to be shifting. So that's also an important takeaway. Are we still going to work with nonprofits and encourage more shelters and availability for our unhoused population? Yes, but the important thing is to realize that that is we're no longer under the umbrella of that kind of regulation, if you will. Mm-hmm. However, you know, it's fair to say that, you know, would the city operate because we have to go in that direction? I don't think that's necessarily where this council has been focused. It's really has been and needs to continue to be a focus on the needs of the people in our community and doing whatever we can to move forward.
All right. What's your response to people who want their parks back as soon as possible?
I understand that position very well. I really do. Now, what part of the plan may be at this point is more areas of exclusion, right? For example, we have some issues in our parks that are heavily used by ball players, right, with children. A consideration that could be made at that point is high-use parks that have the issues with organized children playing and et cetera, to exclude those parks, right? Because we have so many parks and public lands in our city, it would seem reasonable to expect that the highest, best-used park should be off limits, given that we have other options, other parks for them to rest if they need.
Okay, that's to that end. I see. Okay, Riverside Park is highly used. All right, Morrison Park is highly used. Then we go to Tussing Park, which is not highly used. It's across the bridge from a highly used area. That leaves Lawn Ridge, that leaves up on Washington, or pardon me, up on Hawthorne, the tennis courts there, that area. You could say highly used, but not as highly used as any of the others. And that comes down to the Kestersons and the Ogles and the Lawn Ridges. So are we moving people around? Are we pointing them in a specific direction? Or can we find a place where they could all go and we could provide bus transportation for them, in and out?
We still have, as I understand it, an issue of we can't really go in the direction of here is the place that you have to go, right? Because I believe we would still have that issue of what we're calling a state-created danger, right? Whatever place that we do put forward and say, here's an option for you, the municipality can't say that's where you have to go if you're experiencing involuntary homeless, because that could be dangerous for certain individuals, and the municipality can't create danger for its citizens, right? So that's where the shift in focus needs to come away from, here's a place where you have to go, but more so, you can't go in these certain places because there are other options. And the difference between those is nuanced, but it makes a lot of sense when you understand that state-created danger portion of the conversation.
Go ahead, Lena, Joel.
Well, we at this point in time, I'm not willing to discuss details of this place or that place. It will come down to that, obviously. Different communities have already attacked this in different ways across the state.
Portland's already making moves to clean out their areas.
Yes, they are. And they may also be under a lawsuit, which we don't want. We've already been through that. So as we look, we got to review what Portland does, what Medford does, what Ashland does, what Roseburg does, and we'll have that before us, and then we'll look at the risks and the benefits of where we're at. We haven't done that yet. I know the Parks Committee had a list of them, and I read through them, and there was a lot of innovative ideas. One of the things we want to do is, as we work towards it, is have some creative thinking, and both for the freeing up of our parks and the serving of all of our people. It's a process, and for me right now to judge the outcome of that process before that meeting would be inappropriate.
Go ahead.
And I think it's important to add, again, under 3115, the standards set forth by the purpose of 3115 are municipalities creating ordinances regarding involuntarily unhoused that are objectively reasonable, right? And right now, given how new it is and what different communities are doing, it's difficult to establish what objectively reasonable means. Right? And there's different communities that have different ideas of what that means. We can look at some communities that may be going a little extreme into objectively reasonable, and there's other communities that are being a little bit more reasonable. So we are in the state of Oregon really experimenting what that objectively reasonable status is, right? And we need to pay attention to other communities in Oregon and find out and determine what this community can do that is objectively reasonable to comply with 3115.
And it is a very important process. If you look at Portland today, I went to downtown Portland. It was almost entirely deserted. You didn't need a walk sign across the street because there was no traffic. This was 11 o'clock on a weekday. There were whole blocks that were abandoned where the businesses had left. Powell Bookstore had only one entrance open, and there was two armed guards at the other door. And that was not uncommon for the few remaining businesses that remained open in Portland. Jake's was not crowded at lunchtime. So every city has a stake in the outcome of this, and we need to do what is right, and we need to get there. I'm not saying that there's just one right answer, but public policy has created this, and public policy needs to help solve this.
All right, what do you say to your constituents out there who say, nothing's changed? If they say that, I still can't go to my park right now.
Well, they would be correct in saying from their subjective view of what is in the physically in the community, that would be correct. Nothing has changed. What has changed is really the paperwork involved in all of this and the things that have prohibited us from healthy change. But healthy change is coming. Mm-hmm. Please be just a little bit patient. We're having some meetings. If you have input for your city council, please reach out to us.
Oh, by all means. But quite frankly, we've been doing this for years already. people who can reach out or have ideas have, I'm quite certain, Is it just finding a place that they can be sent, or meeting certain criteria that has not yet been laid out or at least identified?
So one of the things when people ask me, well, where should I go? And I said, well, it's a free country. You can go wherever you want. I don't know if we want to get into the business of saying, as a city government, telling its citizens where to go. That is not America. Then on the other hand, there's some options and choices. We can regulate things where not to go for the benefit of the people, and I think that's a positive thing. One of the things, if somebody came up to me with that question over the next couple of weeks, I would ask them to be situationally aware, because there's a lot of anger right now. Every change, even a positive change like this, will produce conflict. And we don't want the negative impacts of that conflict to affect people personally. So, and I'm talking about people either in verbal confrontations or physical confrontations. That is not going to solve this. So as we work through this and we get our parks back, and that's our goal, and also our goal to serve the people, we need to have a little bit of patience here, because things are not going to change overnight. And when they do change, it's going to produce some conflicts.
Can you reach into your future bag and find out what's in there? Ideally, if you could make this go away right now, what would you do? What do we do? Do we need to have a place where there's an option to go? We don't force people to go there. We give them an option. This place is available. This place is available. This place is available. But you can't stay here.
So one of the things that, and that varies according, the answer varies according to the person you're talking to. And that's where we need to get together and talk about it, because we, given this new information, we need to reassess what's going on. One of the things that's important to me is that we, in planning any facility for a serving the homeless, that it has a future, because this isn't a permanent condition. I don't view the country 50 years from now as still having this condition. So any capital investments we have, maybe it needs to be a new park in the future. Maybe it needs to be some infrastructure that's needed for the future. Maybe it's a part of the economic development of Spalding or whatever with the infrastructure. But if and when we do plan a place for people to go and stay, the money that we invest, we don't spend it, we invest it for the future of Grants Pass, either for parks or for economic development or whatever, so that over the long term it is an investment and not a cost. And then in the meantime, it serves this function. I think that's a win-win situation. So, like, for example, let's say you got a place, and I'm not talking about any place in particular. Let's say it's zoned industrial. Let's say it has no infrastructure. Well, Portland State University, in their study of homeless shelters, said lack of infrastructure is not a detriment to having a homeless camp there by nonprofits. And so you put one in, and you have portable infrastructure, and then over time you put in the infrastructure. Well, the infrastructure then over the long term serves the whole area for industrial development. And it becomes a win-win for the community and for the people that choose to try to better their lives. And so that, I think that's what we're aiming for.
All right, gentlemen, I really appreciate your input on this morning, because I know it's on a lot of people's minds. I've got to take a little brief pause here, because we have really caught through my break here. I've got some commercials to play. We'll be right back.
Hilda.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show. City Councilors Fazer and Joel King are, and DJ Fazer and Joel King are in studio here. We've got a very, very short, about a 3-minute window here before we have to move and play more commercials. Silly things that get in the way. And pay my grandkids. At any rate, 4th of July, Independence Day, just right around the corner here. I know in the meeting the other day it was talked about maybe just outlawing fireworks within the city of Grants Pass. that went down. But what is the situation here as you know it right now in terms of fireworks on the 4th of July?
There will be a fireworks show at Reinhardt Park,
mm-hmm.
where the city is going to put on. And fireworks are legal from 6 to 11.
6 to 11, I think.
Yep.
Yeah,
was. Yep. Unless, of course, the fire marshal determines that we are in the red, in extreme fire danger. And then and only then, in my opinion, will fireworks be limited or prohibited.
Okay. And when will that determination be made, or do we know?
I presume they're going to be watching the weather up to the last
minute. I imagine they're probably watching it all the time,
yes.
I assume.
Yes, correct. And in those instances, we need to follow the lead of the fire marshal, which at this point, I don't believe his concern was enough to have bring it to the officially to council.
All right. So they're not concerned at this point.
Correct.
Okay. So we'll keep a watch on that. And to all of you out there, keep listening to KJO Radio, because we watch it here, too, also. Gentlemen, lots of things to talk about. The Caveman Pool coming up. Lots of other things on your agenda here. The water treatment plant. Everything seems to be coming to a head here, finally. That all of it's been years in the making. But at the same time, we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to KAJO AM 1270, 99.7 on the FM band, heard all around the world on KAJO.com. News coming up from the Salem Radio Network, SRN News, at the top of the hour. So, once again, you're listening to KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.
Hey, what happened to your washer?
And the race is on for your telephones to take part here at the Tuesday Talk Show. Number to call, 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest today from the Grants Pass City Council. Councilors DJ Fazer and Joel King are in studio. And gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your time and your candor today. We certainly appreciate that. Lots of things to talk about. And of course, we've cussed and discussed the Supreme Court ruling and where we go from here, and it's still undecided, but I know a lot of work is being done behind the scenes. In the meantime, a lot of the work that's being done outside, particularly at the Grants Pass pool, is it's being well utilized from what I understand. What's the status of the pool right now? Obvious that it's going to operate this year, but long-term plans, what's it going to take and how much is it going to cost?
We had this discussion yesterday at the workshop. Council decided 5-3 to task staff with coming up with $11 million, which $4.5 million approximately would need to be raised or renegotiated from other land and building projects. So that's a step forward in let's evaluate if we can fully replace the Caveman Pool to the tune of $11 million. And we've been shown through some pretty stale LB projects that that might just take a clever renegotiation of funds to make that happen. So I think we're excitedly looking forward to seeing, can we make that happen? And me, I'm of the opinion that I'm ready to, if shown that the funds are there, to restore that asset brand new.
Can you define a clever renegotiation of funds?
Sure. We have certain LB projects that are just sitting there. We have a 000, for example, has $100,000+ in it that's just sitting there that has not been allocated to a project. If we were to take that money and put it into the Caveman project, there's $100,000 or $200,000 of the approximately $4.5 million that we would need. There's other projects in the Urban Renewal Agency that we can consider. For example, there's four, I can't remember the exact number, so don't quote me on the exact number, but there's a substantial amount of money that's been put forward in the Urban Renewal Agency for a maker's space, for example, that has just been sitting there without any appreciable ideas of when and where and what that
and,
could
and how,
be.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Right? And so if we weigh that, okay, here's an idea for a makerspace, and if we weigh that against the true asset to this community that Caveman Pool is and the need to replace it, it then becomes obvious to me that we might want to seriously consider putting that money towards the pool.
All right. So from what I understand, to replace the pool or get it operational for another 20 years, we're talking $11 million. And from what I heard through grants and other things, if we come up with about $4.5 million, we're probably good for that?
Correct. Yes. Yep.
Okay. All right. Where does the Y figure into that, the YMCA?
Well, let's step back to the Caveman Pool in its existing condition today. It's losing about 30% of its water, on a weekly or a monthly basis. A huge amount of water it's losing.
I've asked several times, where is that water going? And everybody's scratching their heads. It's not undermining the pool or the streets around it, from what I understand.
We don't know about underneath the pool, but it's going somewhere. The other thing is it's very expensive right now because that's water that's been treated with chemicals for swimming pool. And so you have to... Your use of chemicals now is much higher than it would be under a well-maintained pool, which gets much more expensive. So something has to be done. And do you have the pool or do you don't have the pool? If you do have the pool, what kind of maintenance do you have? The opportunity costs of that $11 million can be things like the development of Beacon Park. It can be things like... the bike trails on Dollar Mountain. It could be a reduction in the maintenance of the parks. All those were part of the opportunity costs that were associated with that. The other opportunity costs could be the lack of funding for doing anything and finding a place for people to go under the homeless problem. So there's connections in that opportunity cost throughout the whole community. And it's not just in recreation or those projects that DJ mentioned. So we got to take a very close look at that. As we move forward, the Y is a great opportunity for an investment of, the land base is probably, $600,000. You get a not an $11 million pool, but you get a $30 million facility.
We're talking in South Grants Pass,
yes,
in the Allen Creek area.
Yeah, and it's not used for just 70 days out of the year, hopefully, with the lack of fires, but it's going to be used year-round because it's we'll have a year-round pool. It has a roof over it. And the caveman pool has been only used for about 70 days a year in the last 4 or 5 years, and so that's a pretty big investment for a very limited amount of time. The other thing is, we look at it, the Y is also looking at how they can put in affordable housing along with it, because that's traditionally been several Ys throughout the world. I know over in Jerusalem, the Y was run by the Muslims, actually, the Palestinians. And they had housing associated with their Y. It's not an uncommon thing. So we might be able to get some low-income housing out of it at the same time, which I think is going to happen.
All right. My question about the YMCA is, because I know they essentially run the caveman pool right now by contract, and I'm not sure how that works out financially either for the city or for the Y. But is there an opportunity, if caveman pool is refurbished to a new condition, another 20-year life on that pool, can we expand that 70 days of use? I know the high school uses it for physical training. What's the potential for a refurbished caveman pool, and should we find a way to that? Should we check all those funds and find enough money to get the $4.5 million to get started?
Well, the pool today has those opportunities as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be done right now, or could have been done over the last 20 years. It hasn't been done. Whether it's done in the future or not, it will take a focus and a concentration on that.
That's what I'm talking about. If that comes to fruition, all of the stars are aligned and we say, yes, let's refurbish that pool, are we talking about a year long, missing next year, next summer, for that pool? And what will we have at the end?
To answer that question at this point, I'd be totally guessing. Mm-hmm. That will be a natural progression and part and parcel to the conversation. How long will it take? What kind of sacrifices are we going to need to make? Can we afford the pool? What kind of amenities are we going to have at the pool? Is the YMCA willing to extend that contract and provide the services and effectively run the pool? All excellent questions. But at this point, we're truly in the investigative stage of, can we afford it? And if we can't afford it, are we going to pull the trigger? Now, the Parks Advisory Committee did entertain a motion to council that said that they would like to see us just refurbish the pool, less expensive, but just to sort of extend the life of it. I don't think that we are at a situation with that pool that we can really get away with a half measure on it. It is far beyond its anticipated lifespan. So I think at this point, in just my opinion as one counselor, that the conversation should be either replacement now or replacement in the future, and just hop along with what we have for the meantime. But the hop along will inevitably turn into a closure of the pool soon, I would imagine.
Okay. All right. So we're good for this year, it looks like.
Yes.
We're good for this summer, and we'll see what happens down the road. Once again, we've been at this for years, and looks like years in advance, too. All right. Let's move on a little bit here. Let me check. Okay. Don't want to get away from those commercials. I got to get the boss really gets upset when I don't play commercials. I can't imagine that. We'll be right back.
What does being on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday talk show in progress right now, 541-472-1270. If you have a question or comment for either of our guest city councilors, DJ Fazer and Joel King are with us today. And we've talked about, of course, the Supreme Court decision, Caveman Pool. We've got a couple of other projects going on right now. Water treatment plant. Where do we stand with that? And is the cost still going up, or have we reached the point where we have things locked in?
It's another big, exciting topic for this community, Chuck. So we have 60% design completed. We can anticipate very soon to have 90% design, and looking at a guaranteed maximum price October, September, which is really exciting. Now, at this point, in our based on the presentation that Jason Kennedy of Public Works gave to City Council yesterday, is that if we extrapolate the costs into the guaranteed maximum price, this community can't afford it without any more increases of what we've already instilled. So that's excellent news. However, we're still reliant on the BRIC grant, right, and some associated fundings that could come with that. We've received some.
Now, that BRIC grant, that's the big one. Are we talking, what, $50 million?
Yes. Yep. That's the big one. We truly are reliant on that BRIC grant. There has been some talk amongst the powers that be to Public Works that they're fairly certain we're going to get that grant, but we won't know that until it's finalized and stamped, right? So given that we are relying on it, it is good news that it seems likely that we're going to get it. And if those things fall in line and the extrapolation of the guaranteed maximum price at this point are all come to fruition, we can afford a water treatment plant. And that is fantastic news.
Understanding the pace at which government removes snail's pace, do we have a time when we'll know about that grant? Is there a line drawn by the end of the year, by the end of the month?
I would be guessing if I answered that question. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just keep our fingers crossed, and I imagine the fireworks will, pardon the pun, but the fireworks will go off when that happens, mm-hmm. when that comes through. All right. That being said, we've been talking about lots of money for the pool. We've been talking about lots of money for the water treatment plant. We've been talking about moving money around. And, of course, we've been talking about law enforcement or public safety and those monies. And every month I see some of the extra money coming out of my utility bill. Okay. So what is the plan right now? And I know that the utility fee is just barely going to maintain what we have going right now, and that not for a long time. Do we have a plan going forward? What are the discussions in the city council in order to continue public safety, at least at the level that we're at, and increasing it to the level that both the sheriffs and the fire department want? Pardon me, the sheriff, the city police.
It is so very difficult to be able to extrapolate the cost of public safety and how we're going to pay for it, especially right now. We are going to have open labor negotiations with the police next year, right, which could blow any plans that we have at this point apart, depending on how much of an increase can we expect for the current level of service, right? So having a plan of how much more revenue do we need is an extraordinarily difficult question to answer at this point. We do know that we can cover the nut for now with that utility fee, and hurry up and wait.
Hurry up and wait. Joel, you're going to lean in right there?
Well, so this year we're in good shape financially. Last year we were in good shape financially. As we look forward to the budget committee next year and possibly even to a citizens committee that looks at long-range funding, we have the opportunity during this year some breathing space to monitor and see where we're headed and what's going on. And we have a pretty good idea of where we're headed, and it's going to need some additional funding. So the other thing is our facilities, especially for our fire folks, are don't adequately serve the city. So there's some capital investment dollars that are needed there as well, and we have that scheduled as a future discussion item for the council.
Okay, here's a $64 question, and some of you over the age of 40 might understand that $64 question, that reference. Personally, Joel, is there a way, because we've seen several ideas come up with the city council in terms of food and beverage tax, a 2% sales tax designated for specific months. Is there something that you would like to see done that the city has talked about or going forward or modify any one of those plans? Because we know that utility tax is not going to cut it for very long.
That's correct. Utility tax is... We were one of the few communities in Southwest Oregon and on the west side of Oregon, honestly, that didn't have one. So we were just catching up, and the one that we have is fairly small compared to the rest of the communities. Jacksonville and Medford and Roseburg, and then you get into the towns up north. I'm looking at, I haven't made up my mind, obviously. There's a lot of different options. I need to listen to people. There's some externalities that affect other things in all of the funding. For example, a sales tax, if you're the only town or county that has a sales tax in the state of Oregon, what does that do to you economically? If you have a restaurant tax and people are struggling, what does that do to you, not just to one restaurant or one waitress or whatever, but what does that do to your macroeconomics of your community? Because we are not a rich community. And there's an interesting video I saw, and the laid-off question was, well, can the government steal?
I didn't mean to laugh right out loud.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. And if you look at world history, the answer is yes. And so I think we're far from that, but we need to consider that as well as we move through this. Especially when 60% of our income is either welfare or retirement income. So we need to look at it. We need to monitor. We need to keep a close pen on it. And it's something down the road here. This year we're good. The utility fee, which was... relatively doesn't feel like it to some folks, but certainly doesn't feel like it to the nonprofits, because they're paying the church and the Asante and other nonprofits, and as well as the bigger stores like Walmart and Fred Meyer. They're paying a pretty big chunk now with their water bill. Plus the people that are on fixed income, it went up just like their grocery bill did. So. As we move forward, I haven't made up my mind. We need to look at what we're doing. I think there's some good solutions out there. If you look at the priority of what government is established for, public safety is pretty high up. It's not a municipal swimming pool. It's not telling people where to go to live and then providing them a place to live. So those things are important, and they're part are rich of our tradition, but that's not the priority of local government. Local government's priority is primarily public safety, and we need to make sure that we put that as a priority.
All right, DJ, same question. If you're a one-man city council, where are you going to find that money?
The reason that's a really difficult question to answer is because the primary issues that we are having in Oregon as a whole, meaning that Grants Pass is not alone in this struggle, is statewide ordinances, statewide laws that prevent revenue growth for public safety. And you combine that with the unionized system, and everybody is experiencing the cost of public safety overrunning the revenues. Everybody in Oregon. So... we can't necessarily solve that problem as a city council of Grants Pass, Oregon. We just have to kind of deal with it at this point. My opinion that the idea for a fire district was as close as we could get to stilling this whole issue. A true divergence of police and fire with their own separate revenue sources would have appreciably helped the issue that we're having. The voters said no, okay? And that's unfortunate because I truly believe that that was an appreciable solution to the issue that we're having. And we would not have been we would not have been alone in the state of Oregon. So we're forced with, okay, we have the question. We have a level of service and we have a revenue issue. Do we increase revenues or do we decrease level of service, right? We're effectively operating at a...
You're pretty marginal right now. Kudos to the chief of police here for what we do have out there. It is highly professional.
You could not have said it better. Warren is doing such a fantastic job with what he has, and we truly are operating on a functional minimum level of service with public safety. That is a fact, in my opinion, and he has done a wonderful job. So when we ask the question, do we reduce the services or do we increase revenues, it becomes obvious very quick that
you need to find some money.
Exactly. That is the point that I'm driving at. Yep.
All right. We've got about 2 minutes left. I'll give you each 1 minute to tell people what we should take away from today's program, or just use the 1 minute. DJ.
We need to hear from the community, as always, and we want to hear from the community about what you want to see solution-driven for the issue of involuntary homelessness. We have experienced a huge change that's going to allow Grants Pass to operate as other communities under House Bill 3115, and we intend to do that. We don't want to operate in a vacuum. We need the community to let us know what they want to see that could be objectively reasonable so council can establish ordinances accordingly. So please reach out to your city council. Now is the time.
All right.
Come to July 10th. That'll be a very important meeting.
All right. Thank you very much, Joel. You've got a minute.
Yes. For the next 3 days, your house can burn down. It doesn't take a red flag warning for your house to catch fire and burn down. We're going to have a lot of heat, excessive heat warning. So please take care. Be considerate of your neighbor. If you're going to use fireworks, make sure you got water handy and do it in a place where there's not a lot of flammable fuels, and be safe. Let's come out of this intact and in good shape.
Gentlemen, we want to thank you very much. Wish you both a very, very happy and festive Independence Day coming up this Thursday and a productive meeting coming up on July 10th. You're listening to KAJO AM 1270, 99.7 on the FM band and heard all around the world on KAJO.com.